You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we'll look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Welcome to the 602 Club, Trek FM's local watering hole. I am so excited to be here tonight as, well, you know, we don't often get to talk about the end of a franchise. Like, franchises don't seem to end these days anymore. They just seem to go on forever. In fact, I feel like we should maybe just call them all the never-ending stories because they just never end. So tonight, the end of the X-Men franchise as we know it is coming to an end as we talk about Dark Phoenix. And very excited that, well, Christy, I'm glad to have you here to talk about that with me.
I'm pretty excited about
Wait a second. I see what you did. I don't approve of this. I want to point out, too, that you mentioned franchises never ending. Technically, this year is a big year for franchises, quote unquote, ending, because we have Endgame, which we all know isn't really the end, but it's the big finale. And then we have Episode 9, which again isn't the end, but it's the end of the Skywalker saga. Game of Thrones just ended. Come on, Matt.
Thank you for calling him out, Sean.
That's true. Although Game of Thrones is just about to do a prequel series. Star Wars has...
Damn it. You're right. You're right.
Benioff
Nothing
and
comes
Weiss
to an end.
Going to do more films. And
there's money
Marvel
to be made.
Will never end.
Right? Because we're going to get more Guardians of the Galaxy next.
Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah. Black Panther, Spider-Man in like less than a month.
This is the song that never ends. Okay, I had to. Sorry.
As you can hear, Christy and Sean are here to talk about this. It's going to be a blast, I think, getting a chance to dive into this last film. And so before we do that, quick reminder, you know, find us wherever you get your podcasts. Anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find the 602 Club. And make sure if you're on Apple Podcasts or on iTunes, give us a star rating review. Please do help people find the show. Let them know what you think of the show. And when you do that, we'll read your review here online and let people know what you thought of the show. You can also find us on Twitter at Trek FM. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/Trek FM. And we've got the listeners only discussion group on Facebook called the Babel Conference. Now, if you want to join that, please just type Babel into the search field on Facebook or any of the show pages on Trek FM. There's a little button that says discussion. Hit that. That'll let you in the group. And, of course, last but not least, maybe you, kind of old school, you like the email and you want to send us one, go over to trek.fm/contact, choose a show, choose the 602 Club, and that will come to Christy and I. In fact,
what about me?
We'd love to hear what you think of
Do I get an email? Do any of the emails come to me?
No. Yes. If you are on the episode, I always forward that to whoever was a host.
Hey.
That
week,
but only the ones where people are upset by my appearance.
That's true. That's true. I mean, I haven't gotten any of those yet, Sean. So,
oh, all right.
Yeah.
Well, not too bad.
So,
I'm
going
to try my
worries.
Hardest to make it happen.
Well, tonight could be the night because, of course, we're talking about Dark Phoenix. And I just wanted to gauge where you guys were because, you know, this movie, we've got them, basically, I've labeled this kind of idea is remaking mistake. You know, with Days of Future Past wiping out The Last Stand from continuity, they thought, well, why not redo the Dark Phoenix storyline and do it where it's closer to the comic? And so, even before coming into this movie, what did you think of that as an idea since The Last Stand kind of sort of in a roundabout backhanded sort of way told, I guess, a Dark Phoenix story? I wouldn't say it's the Dark Phoenix story. So
it certainly has a character who is a Phoenix in a different version of that story, but never behaves in any manner that is resembling that character, whatever, whatsoever. They were like, oh, Phoenix, that's like ashes, right? So everything will turn to ash, but she won't actually do anything Phoenix related. So that was my reaction. It's weird. The X-Men franchise, I have such a love for it. Had its ups and downs, some significant downs, but it was always a bummer that I hadn't read the Phoenix story, the Dark Phoenix story. I was a big fan of the movies and never really delved into the comics much, but I knew the Phoenix story, I think, from the series and just hearing about it from everybody. And X-Men 3 was a nightmare to watch in general, but I was also bummed out that I was like, oh, that sounded like it could have been a really cool ending to a trilogy if it had been done right. So I was like moderately interested to see what would happen. I was like, they wouldn't do it again and do it bad after doing it wrong the first time, would they? And I'm lukewarm after Apocalypse. I was kind of like, I don't know. And hearing all the production woes and things like that, I wasn't like excited, but I wasn't dismissive either. But that's kind of where I was.
I get where you're coming from, because I was kind of the same as far as my history of involvement with like the X-Men franchise. It was mostly movies, a little bit here and there with the comic. So I was like aware of what, you know, you should expect from the characters, but I was never as involved in that comic as others. But I mean, I wasn't dismissive of it. I was kind of curious of how it was going to come out, especially seeing a lot of the actors returning. But I think that it's not promising at first, you know, before seeing the movie, to know that the same person that made Last Stand is now doing this one. It's like, right. Wait, no, I'll fix it this time, I promise. It's like, yeah, no, quit while you're behind. And honestly, I think it, just from the reviews we saw on Rotten Tomatoes this week, I feel like it's kind of made him realize maybe I should have just stopped.
I wanted them to do this story well. I never read the comics, but I knew obviously Last Stand was a train wreck because it was a train wreck. It's just not a very good movie whatsoever. And, you know, one of the things I think, I was thinking through this, and I feel like this was also a question I thought, when we're looking at the X-Men franchise after Apocalypse, right? Is this even the right time to try and tell this story with the version of the characters that we have?
I feel like there's a movie missing. So my big thing with Apocalypse, just in terms of, we did First Class and we did Days of Future Past together, Matt. So
right, we didn't talk about Apocalypse.
Yeah, I think we were pretty much on the same page about both of them, where First Class I thought it was like, all right, well, at least we're back on the right track. I don't love this movie, but it's a step in the right direction. And Days of Future Past, I was like, oh, that was so good. That was so much fun. And Apocalypse, I almost forgot about it the instant I left the theater, but I wasn't miserable watching it. I remember that much. But my biggest thing about that movie, I remember thinking like, well, God, I wish they had just focused on like Jean Grey, Scott Summers, and Kurt Wagner, and just focused on the kids, like the new kids. This feels like...
So the new kids on the block is
the new kids
saying.
On the block. I just wanted the new kids on the block to have a cameo appearance in every X-Men movie and perhaps just record the entire soundtrack too. That would have been fantastic. But I feel like there was a movie missing almost. Like Dark Phoenix is still... This movie treats it like with the gravitas of like... Endgame almost, like in terms of like this is the end to a big franchise, but without having earned it, and with characters that we haven't spent a lot of time getting to know. Like they were on the periphery of what happened in Apocalypse, and then all of a sudden we're expected to like be invested in them in Dark Phoenix. And I just felt like, God, I wish I'd had more time with them, because I really like the actors a lot, and I think they could have been really great if they'd been given some breathing room. But this felt like I'd missed an episode of a TV show and had suddenly been asked to like, no, but you really have to care about these people that you don't know much about.
Right. Like it just doesn't build to the same kind of level like the Marvel Universe does toward Endgame or toward even Infinity War. And so it does feel like a piece is missing. And then too, when you read about how Kinberg felt like before maybe the scope was too large and he needed to bring it back down and be more grounded, he can't do that at the same time as wanting it to be more similar to the comic. Because apparently the comic for the Dark Phoenix part of it was more in space
So no one else has read the comic. I actually happened to read the comic just in time for this episode. And it's ridiculous. The comic is ridiculous. I will also point out that the Dark Phoenix story arc takes way too long to get to the Dark Phoenix part of it. That threw me off. Mm. It introduces Dazzler. For those of you who don't know, Dazzler is basically like the Taylor Swift of X-Men, I guess, and everyone
which we saw in this film.
Yeah, so. she makes an appearance
not Taylor
in the film.
Swift, but Dazzler.
I appreciated that cameo, but the Dark Phoenix saga, it's like it collects about 8 issues, and of those 8 issues, only 2 of them really focus on Phoenix. The rest of them are like, it's the Hellfire Club. Here's Dazzler. Here's Kitty Pryde. And I read the comic, but also most of the Phoenix story takes place in outer space.
There you go.
And like a cosmic, like alien, like they battle on some alien planet and it's ridiculous. But you're absolutely right. It's kind of like, well, especially in the era where the MCU has made like everything, like there's a Guardians of the Galaxy movie that people loved, like that. Now that that's kind of mainstream, there's almost no excuse not to embrace the ridiculousness of that story. It's kind of a bummer, but
right.
See, and this is the thing though, is that I don't think any of that is the issue. I think the issue is something that you are touching on, both Christy and Sean. It's that there feels like there's something missing. Apocalypse did not do a good job of building on those new characters. And when I say new characters, they're not really new because they're reinterpretations of the characters that we knew from the other films. And in this continuity, you know, it's like they have the possibility then, because of what we saw in Days of Future Past at the very end, where with what Wolverine sees, it could all go towards like being a really good version of all of that, right? And so, you know, what happens though is that Apocalypse doesn't actually then build on that goodwill, I feel like, with those new characters. We don't really utilize them very well, and we don't really spend the quality time that we did with those original characters in 1 and 2 where we really cared about them. And so I think that's more the issue, is that it's not that this story has gravitas to it or it's trying to take itself seriously or any of those things. I just feel like that it wasn't the right time to try and tell this story with these characters, because they needed a story to connect us with those characters that we hadn't had yet. And that's really the main problem. It's not that really this is a bad movie, I don't think. I just think that it's more that I don't care about Jean and Scott and, you know, the new...
you don't even know their names. That's how little you care about them.
You know, I don't care about them in the way that I cared about that original cast, because they haven't done what they needed to do to make me care about them. And it's not even due to the performances of the characters or anything like that. It's just like you said, it feels kind of like this story skips over the 10 years that would have been better for them to have made another movie in and then tell this story. Because if you did that and made us care, then this story would have so much more weight and it would be a much better film. But they don't do that.
Yeah, I feel like Apocalypse is what screwed all this up. It basically, you had one trilogy that started with First Class, continued with Days of the Future Past, and then Apocalypse was like the start of another trilogy that then skipped the second part and concluded with Dark Phoenix. But it's like, I feel like you could have concluded the First Class trilogy and then started a new one that focused on Cyclops and then maybe given us some more time with them.
Right. Well, and I mean, too, if you think about, like, Mystique would be the perfect example. You care more about her in this movie because we've had so much time in so many situations dealing with her emotionally and getting to know her as a person than you have with Cyclops or with Jean. I feel like we still know the same things about Cyclops and Jean that we have the whole time. They're like, we've seen what their powers are.
They like each other. He has a cool visor. Yeah. And she has red hair and gets headaches. Yeah. That's it.
I mean, he looks way cooler than Jordy LaForge, you know.
I wanted
visor.
Him to wear his sunglasses. Is that just not a thing anymore? Is that I not, like, no. I couldn't decide, like, did they think it was not hip for him to wear sunglasses, because it wasn't particularly hip for him to wear the visor the entire movie. I would have been grateful to see some sunglasses come out. I was very upset.
I mean, and Ray-Ban would have been, you know, happy. They would have been all over that. You know, yeah. So I think, you know, that's kind of, it's so interesting coming into this movie, and I think I just feel like the lesson that they didn't take out of Apocalypse, which would have been the most important lesson, was all superhero movies need you to feel for the characters that you're trying to tell your story with. And here, the characters I care about are Charles and Magneto and Hank, right? Because and Raven, because those are the characters that we've spent the most time with. And their storylines still have an ongoing thread. But when you switch it and make most of this movie about the internal characterization of Jean Grey, who is a character that I haven't spent a lot of time with, and in this incarnation, it doesn't matter how good Sophie Turner is or isn't in the movie, I have trouble connecting with that character, because, like we said, it's like there is a piece missing to their history. And it's almost as if I've come into the movie where it's like, oh, we had intermission and now we're, you know, mm-hmm. like, but that intermission and that other part seemed like they were kind of important to where we get in this storyline. Because one of the things I don't even have in the outline, but I think is interesting, this movie, we kind of start with the X-Men being people that the world love, and like the president has, I mean, they have an X phone.
Yeah, they're on like, speed dial.
That was
Charles
amazing.
Just gets a call from the president and is like on an X phone. It's like, hey, we need your help in space. You know, like,
yeah,
there's
it
so
felt
much
actually
that his,
like an X-Men. Like it felt like X-Men. Like it was like this is the first time it's felt like, oh, they're a team that they go off and they fight things that nobody else can fight.
Mm-hmm.
The other ones are, it's like, oh, they're outcasts. They're kind of like working around with smaller scale stuff. But this is the first time it was like, here they are. They're going to help save the day. I was like, I like that. That's kind of cool.
And they're matching uniforms and their nice ship.
And they're matching uniforms. That's right.
And what we needed was a whole movie of that. Like,
yeah,
basically of them. Like, it would have been great to have that, you know, like 5 years between Apocalypse and this, and have them be where they're just being accepted by the world as this team, and maybe it's their first big mission that makes them the superheroes that the world thinks of them as, you know, and that way you get to come together with this team and you really start to care about these characters. But they kind of excised that. Mm-hmm. And you know, it was kind of interesting because then in the movie you take a character to which I think it's good to ask this question, but is Charles the villain in this movie? Is he really the one who's more the villain than even Volk or however you say, you know, Jessica Chastain's character?
We'll just call her Jessica Chastain.
Yeah. We'll just call her Jessica. We're tight like that. Jess. Yeah. But I thought that was really interesting here, because they're layering it with the idea that Charles is trying to do the right thing, but maybe Charles has also started to drink a little bit of his own Kool-Aid, you know, and believe a little bit too much of his own hype. And that was also kind of like, that was the most fascinating part of the movie, because Charles is the character that I probably care the most about here. And I felt like that was a very interesting question to then ask for this mastermind chess player that we've had throughout all of these films. Has that kind of led him to think a little too highly of himself? And to me, at least, it gave McAvoy something really to sink his teeth into, and probably the most rewarding part of the movie.
Well, yeah, like an abuse of power, basically. I like that they make it like he can get into anybody's head anytime he wants, and that's not fair. You know, like, what if Jean doesn't want him in there messing with stuff? And apparently now we know he did go in and legitimately, intentionally change her memories so that she would forget about what happened. And I mean, on the one hand, you could say he's doing the right thing by protecting her, like they said in the movie. But then on the other hand, it's like, but they're her memories. That's her life. Like, you're not God to just come in and change whatever you feel like changing about a person.
Yeah, I really liked the idea of it. Like, I wasn't, it didn't put me off. Like, I liked the prospect of, let's explore a different side of this character. Because Xavier, you know, you see him kind of stumble a bit in Days of Future Past, and he's kind of a more like youthful and exuberant version of the character in First Class. But like for the most part, it's like he's a noble guy. He does the right thing. And this is the first time they try to explore a darker side of that. It's the same thing where it's like this would have worked so much better if they'd planted the seed of it in any of the movies. But for the most part, he's been a decent guy. So it was a weird left turn for them to try to do the entire arc of that version of the character in this like movie that's less than 2 hours. But it to be fair, McAvoy's really good in the part, and it's not like, it's not that it doesn't work. It just felt like a little like, oh, don't try to do this. Like, don't try to switch things up so near the end of the franchise with this one movie. I wish they'd given it a little bit more time to develop.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I think that would have been, I because a part of this, like you said, Sean, it's like this movie is about just 2 hours. And it feels like this needs to be a 3-hour epic or something that's been kind of like there. Again, there needs to be another story between this one and Apocalypse to really make us feel this. And I don't feel like it's a bad storyline, because I do feel like in many ways, you know, Charles has always been the character that does think he knows what's best. And I think you can see that specifically in First Class. Like if you go back and watch First Class, he is the character who kind of believes he knows what's best for everybody all the time. Even, I mean, we see that fight kind of between him and Magneto, you know, the idea of feeling like he knows what's truly right and good for everybody. He's kind of the moral arbiter in this world, and here he uses that moral arbiter role to do something that the intentions are good, but he doesn't truly think through what the impact is going to be. And I kind of, you know, one of those things is that the desire that every parent has, you know, to want to protect their children. And that in the end, you can't, you have to allow your child to go through those dark, tough things, because it's really the only way that they grow. And if you just push things away or push things down or try to hide things or you know, don't deal with things emotionally, you end up with the problem you get with Jean here in the first place, which is that she doesn't know how to deal with the emotions. And now she's got all of these powers and these emotions combined together, and she really doesn't know how to handle it. You know, it's like, it wouldn't have been so much of a problem if she had actually been able to walk through the process of healing from what's happened instead of just having never dealt with it in the first place and just pushed away as if it wasn't a problem. I mean, that, again, like, it's good. You know, like, that's, again, it's not a bad theme or anything like that. I just feel like it just does feel a little bit rushed, and that's too bad. Especially with this series that's, you know, done some films where it really does a good job of that. Like, you know, I think of Logan, you know, it's able to take that storyline, but it builds off of all of that history so well. And it makes radical changes to characters like Charles, right? But that's because it's set in the future. Like, this movie, it's like, it has a lot of really good intentions and a lot of good ideas, but it kind of fails in the same way that Charles fails, you know?
Yeah, I feel like maybe part of the problem is I kind of, Days of Future Past gave me almost the, without doing the same story, it gave me kind of the X-Men 3 I always hoped for. Like, it was like, oh, we're correcting the past errors we did. They brought Bryan Singer back to kind of like, oh, he'll finish what he started. So to me, that was almost, even though it opened the doors for the franchise to continue, it almost felt like a conclusion to the first couple X-Men movies. And Logan especially felt like this is like a conclusive ending to this story. And part of maybe the problem with Dark Phoenix is it doesn't really feel like the ending of anything. I know they were at the last minute, I guess the marketing campaign tried to push this idea of it's the big finale, but it doesn't feel final in the same way those movies did to me. And I think that works against it too, is it's they're coming after, this movie comes after Logan and Days of Future Past, and those movies were really strong. And this movie is just kind of like, no, but we're the finale, and just kind of gives up. And not that it like, I'm kind of with you, Matt. I don't think this movie's terrible. It kind of falls into the same category as Apocalypse, where I feel like I'm forgetting about it. I have forgotten about it, but I wasn't miserable watching it. I was just kind of like, oh, okay,
right.
This is fine,
right.
I guess.
Like, there were some moments like this one with Charles that it resonates with you still. And I misspoke earlier, but I was meaning with Raven's death, like that meant something to me. Like I actually got teary. So it wasn't all bad or anything like that. But it definitely did feel rushed. And then I think that there should have been more time to explore everything to do with the characters individually. But I did really like going this different route with Charles, because he's always been the good guy, to show that everybody makes mistakes. And I like what you hit on, Matt, that she really, Jean, never learned how to deal with having problems in general, much less the big problem that happened with her accidentally killing her parents. I mean, so now she's older and in this situation where she has all of this power she can't control and doesn't know how to handle problems. So she just freaks out and literally explodes every time.
And what's nice is the point you brought up, where the deaths in this movie, there aren't that many deaths. Like, again, it doesn't feel like
everybody should have died.
Raven. Yes. Raven is okay. Is she gets killed. And Jean Grey is not dead, but not dead. But remember, like, I just remember part of what made me so angry about X-Men 3 is how insignificant every death felt. Like, Cyclops dies instantly. Professor X, he explodes. Everybody who dies in that movie, it just felt so like, all right, well, this is ridiculous. So at the very least, Dark Phoenix had a sense of, like, if it wasn't always successful, when Raven died, it didn't feel like, it felt, or earned might not be the right word, but it didn't feel like just a throwaway death. It was kind of expected, but it didn't feel as false. It didn't ring as false to me as the everything in X-Men 3, everyone who died in that movie.
Well, and I think that, you know, just speaking specifically of Raven's death, is the fact that it does what any death in any story should do. It impacts all of the characters in pretty profound ways. So you get the huge impact for Jean Grey, who this has been her mentor. This has been the person who has been by her side, who's been helping her, you know, and
all of this off screen in the right. In the movie we
again,
never got.
Right. Again, that's again where, you know, another movie would help. But we get that sense that this really has had an impact on her. And then of course it has the same impact on Charles and on Magneto and Hank and the rest of the team. You know, so it does what you want a death to do, which is to really take all of the characters and move them in different directions and have that death them deal with it in different ways. And so, you know, when you get that moment where Hank confronts Charles about his mistake, you know, there's real weight to that. And that's probably, I would say, that is the best scene in the movie, because it's with the two characters we care the most about, and it's the one that plays up the themes perfectly, but through the performances and again through the characters, that because we've been with them for so long, we really care about what's going on between them and what they're feeling and all of that. And so, you know, again, there are some things that this movie does well. I think, you know, as we've been saying, it would have been better if there had been more context, because we had another film to set that up. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that we don't have that, because I think you could have had some real success in that. But I mean, you have some moments like that, where, like you mentioned, Christy, Raven's death, and then the aftermath of Raven's death with the different characters. And it actually is good. So,
and I'm honestly disappointed that we didn't get more Magneto, even though I know this is Dark Phoenix.
It's the same thing. It's
Michael
it's the problem with
just being all the things.
Yeah. Like, he's great at everything. Well,
they don't feel like they got conclude. Like, I don't feel like the ending for Xavier in this movie is he gives up and decides like he's defeated, which is not a bad idea to like kind of put him in that place. But again, it just felt like Magneto, especially like what has his character been doing? I feel like Apocalypse, they did this weird thing where he went off and had a family, and I honestly can't remember. I'd forgotten that movie. But then in this, he's like on a mutant colony, just kind of their leader. It doesn't feel like it feels like they forgot to conclude the stories of the characters we've known and gave us a bunch of new characters to invest in. And I just want more Michael Fassbender. That's really all I'm trying to say. I want more Michael Fassbender in my life all the time.
Oh, me too.
That's it.
The Island of Misfit Mutants. That's where he's been.
Oh, right. Like, we got to go. We got to move.
When did
there.
He decide, you know, I'm done hurting people. I want to be a farmer.
Right.
It just
that was
came
also
out of
in
nowhere.
The unproduced sequel that we'll never see.
Farming with Magneto.
Hello and welcome to Mutant Farming.
Oh man. That would be real exciting, actually. I feel like
that should be an app. Mutant Farm.
There's,
you know,
some mutant out there who's had like the useless power of like farm, like, oh, I can fertilize real well. This is a little dirty.
Wow.
But like, this mutant out there is like, it can make flowers grow with his mind, or it can make how about just corn? It's like, my power is to make crops grow. And then Magneto comes along and he's like, I've got the perfect place for you. And he finally
I love the development of this story.
It started with someone creating fertilizer and became a really touching story. That should be the next X-Men movie, I think, is a spinoff about this character.
I think we've got a plan here.
X-Men, yeah. Mutant Farming.
So this... we mentioned that, you know, this movie does have a more somber tone. And I think, you know, it's one of the things that most of the X-Men movies do is that there is a lot more seriousness to them, you know, for the most part. They always kind of took themselves more seriously. And it is something that I really enjoy about their movies. You know, there aren't just jokes to have jokes. And like, you know, we think about the subject matter here, you know, this is a little bit more like a Days of Future Past thing. I mean, we're dealing with, this could be the end of the world again if this power is unleashed on it, or if it's in the hands of the wrong person. And so, you know, I just appreciate that there is a movie company out there that's trying to tell a different type of superhero movie. And the X-Men movies had done that for so long, and they've been doing it well. I think this movie does it well. I think, again, the tone doesn't quite work because...
Because you have, one second it's serious, and then the next second there's a mutant attacking you with his dreadlocks.
Well, and I don't even have, you know, a problem with that because we've seen mutants with some really weird powers in these movies.
I actually was like, this feels like it would be in a comic book. Like this goofy guy with his evil dreadlocks.
Like it's sort of like,
I mean,
the X Men ever
name,
defeat
like dreadlock?
Him.
Nice.
Yeah. Yes.
Probably.
Psylocke and Dreadlock.
Yeah, there you go.
There's the next. That's the next
Could
spinoff.
We get Psylocke back? I missed Psylocke.
Yeah, where's she? Anyway. She was barely in Apocalypse, and I don't know.
She was supposed to be in this movie apparently, but she was filming that awful Shane Black film Predator, could not be in this film when they were filming it. So, but I just appreciate I did appreciate the tone of this movie, and I felt like, you know, they stuck with the consistent tone that they've been working with throughout all of the X-Men movies, and I appreciate that they never thought to themselves, oh man, we gotta be more like the other Marvel movies. No, they always stuck to what they did, and I thought that was smart to not just try and copy something else that has been successful, because they had been successful at this, you know, so it to me it worked in this movie. I just wish it had worked better because there had been another serious movie before this one, after Apocalypse. Well,
and it's funny that you say that, that you know, like they didn't want to copy something else with the funniness. I totally agree. And I get like the tone was on point with everything before it in the X-Men franchise. But I did read that Kinberg apparently was deliberately trying to make the film more like what he had seen in Logan. And in that he wanted it to be more in that kind of grounded way and organic. And I think he even said, like Star Wars, basically giving props to, you know, George Lucas for having this more handmade, lived-in world. But when you're trying to tell this story that should have, like Sean was saying, taken place more in outer space, being grounded doesn't make sense. And then it felt too, like, honestly, that the screenwriting that Kinberg did in some of the scenes with the dialogue, I didn't like when they had Jennifer Lawrence say, you know, the women are doing all the work around here anyway. You should call us the ex-women.
That felt a little too winky.
It was.
Like, yeah, it's right?
Like a, and that
someone in the
dumb.
Audience, like, lost it in the theater. Like, it was the best line they'd... It's like they'd never seen a movie before and was like, what? You can say
that's
that?
So funny.
It was like, man, I'm glad I saw the movie with that person.
But the other thing I was curious, too, what you guys thought about the power that's supposedly going to destroy everything from within Jean, and then the aliens are trying to steal back from her. It just didn't have the weight that I wanted it to. Did you feel the same way?
No. That story felt... The Dark Phoenix stuff felt the least significant in the Dark Phoenix movie. Like, Jean kind of flying around being like, will anyone accept me? And everyone's like, no. And she's like, all right, bye. And she'll fly off and go somewhere else. Everything around her seems like emotionally... Like, Nicholas Holt is so good. And like you said, Matt, the scene with him and Professor Xavier just sitting down at the table felt very like, if Kinberg was going for Logan, that scene alone is clearly like, he's like, okay, at least I'll have this one scene in the movie. But Jean Grey, like, Sophie Turner, she's a great actress, and I mean, she's amazing in Game of Thrones, and she's good in this movie. It just feels like it's tough. There's not a lot to... It felt like she didn't have a lot to work with. And the bad guys, the aliens, I don't even remember what they're called. The Jessica Chastain Brigade. They are so... They're about as bland as any, like, villain I've seen in a superhero movie. Like, I could not have cared less about them. I couldn't have cared less about, like, we need the Phoenix power. It's like, I just don't care. This is, like... an excuse to have the X-Men fight something at the end on a train. There's, I feel like there is a review. There has to be a review out there that says this movie, which is a train wreck, has a literal train wreck in it. Someone has got to have mentioned that in their review. It just felt too easy. But yeah, I feel the same way. The Phoenix stuff was almost the weakest part. I wanted more of the relationship between her and Scott, and that felt like they tried, but I'm going off on different tangents, but Ty Sheridan, here's another guy, him and Michael Fassbender. I wanted more of both of them because I think they're both great.
Well, and I think, you know, you hit on something that's important, and again, it's where I was like, this movie needs to be a 3-hour epic, or it needs to be like a 2-parter, basically. Because, you know, the storyline with Jessica Chastain's shape-shifting aliens, they're to Dabari. So, they
thank you. Someone's needed, doing their homework.
Yeah, what needed to happen was there needed to be a prologue to this movie with their story, like Lord of the Rings or whatever, where you tell what this power is and you explain it all. And I think, again, this movie just kind of feels rushed. So maybe even a 2.5-hour movie where we really allow these moments to happen and to breathe, and you get more character moments together. So, you know, you can spend more time at the beginning with the team having some successful missions before they go on the fateful mission. You know, there's nothing wrong with a movie kind of just getting to its point. And I think one of the things that it seems like Kinberg did is he wanted this movie to be more character driven. So he felt like he had to get to the emotional weight of what's going on with Jean Grey. And that meant getting her the power as soon as possible, but I think that's the mistake that they make, is by not allowing the movie to breathe at the beginning, by giving you a prologue, by allowing you to get back in with these characters and getting into their world and getting back in with them, so that then about a third of the way through the movie, you get that happening, and then you can spend the rest of the film dealing with the repercussions of that fateful mission. But the movie pretty much just starts off with them going on this mission, and it just never allows you to catch up with them. And so it's like, it's not a bad tone or anything. It's really just an editing and a pacing issue and a storytelling issue of just not allowing you to kind of get back in with, hey, we're with the X-Men and look, we're going on a few missions and oh, the world loves them. You know, like, we don't get to feel any of that stuff because we just immediately jump into, oh, and she's got this dark power, and then we don't explain these aliens, and it's like, it you know, I just fixed all your problems in the film.
I'm confused too by, so the Phoenix power in the comics, it's something that kind of resides in Jean, and I think they did that in Apocalypse too. It was like, oh, she has like a true potential, and she became like all fiery and stuff at the end of Apocalypse. But so what, it's very confusing as to like, so did the evil alien make her, did that power manifest or did it give her? I think everyone involved with these movies is just as confused as I am watching them, because I'm not sure what it was supposed to do. Like if it was just releasing something inside her or if it was the Phoenix itself. I don't
know.
Well,
and even, I agree with what you're saying, because if you think about it, you know, from the first line of the movie, it says, can we evolve? But then they never really explain that. And you don't seem to see Jean evolve. It's more just a struggle. And then she sacrifices herself. And I think even with the transfer of the solar power, whatever you want to call it, between her and the alien, it feels like at first they're trying to tell her, be who you are and just let everything go. And then they're saying, but actually we were here to trick you, to take it back from you.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wait, sense. So do you want it back or do you want to bring out who she really is?
I think what they want is that, and I think in the movie, they're just basically using Jean.
Okay.
Because if she can control the power, that's great. If not, they will kill her and try and take, you know, that power back and whatnot. So, but again, it's just they have all these conversations and things feel very rushed and everything. And so you're not allowed to be able to sit in any of these moments, really, where you can kind of really contemplate what's happening at all. And that's a little bit frustrating. I mean, I would say my favorite thing about Endgame was that those moments, right, where the movie is long and it allows you to sit in these moments. I know some people didn't like it that it was that long. And I think this movie could have benefited from them saying, you know what, we should probably allow people to be able to breathe in these moments.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of movies do that, you know, where it's like, you need just a little bit of space to kind of truly feel what's happening or learn what's happening or anything. And we just feel this rush to like, no, we got to get to the next action scene. And that's not always important, because if the action isn't supported by the story, then the action just becomes meaningless action. And that's not what we want. So, you know, we've kind of discussed a little bit, but, you know, the other thing I felt like about this movie is that I liked all of the performances that we got for the most part. There was only one to me that stood out, sadly, as I felt like that was just like, yes, let me get my paycheck and let me never have to wear blue alien skin ever again, even if it's just on my face.
Aww.
I got that vibe too. I don't, I, yeah. She...
This I love is, Jennifer Lawrence. This, I mean, I, yes. I she's one of my
no
favorites.
No offense to
but,
her. She's a long-time listener of the show, so we know she's
I'm
more
sorry,
than welcome
Jen,
to join
I apologize.
Us.
She
sorry,
goes by J-Law.
She, X-Men has the weirdest relationship with its Oscar-winning actors. So, like, the same thing happened with the first X-Men. You had Halle Berry as Storm. was like a moderately well-known actress, but then she wins an Oscar for Monsters Ball, and all of a sudden she's like the main character of X-Men 2. And then she becomes the leader of the X-Men in X-Men 3. Same thing happens with J-Law. You have First Class, she wasn't really that well-known, and then she like blew up right around that time. Like Hunger Games came out, what, the following year? So all of a sudden she's huge. And then Days of Future Past, she's like a huge pivotal part. And then she's like the leader of the X-Men in Apocalypse and this movie. And you just get the sense that like in the first one, Jennifer Lawrence is like, oh yeah, sure, an X-Men movie, that'll be a really good paycheck and that could be fun. And then by the time we get to this one, she's like, no, you know, I have an Oscar. I don't really need to do this, but I guess I will. But I, yeah, she's like not terrible, but she's definitely ready. She's ready to go. She was probably thrilled about getting killed by the second act.
I don't know. I wondered more if it was having to deal with the reshoot situation that maybe it felt that way than her not wanting to come back. I mean, I don't know if I didn't hear anything about her not wanting to come back. But it I don't know.
No, I didn't get the vibe like. With this franchise, it's the X-Men franchise has had a tough time living in the shadow of the MCU.
Oh, yeah. 'Cause
it almost doesn't have a reason to exist. Like when the X-Men were like the team of superheroes, that was like, for me, that was what made them so appealing. And the second you have the Avengers, it's kind of like the X-Men become irrelevant. And I think they've been struggling since the MCU really took off to find their place. It's like, all right, well, we can't do big superhero action. The angle of the superhero team up is kind of stolen. Where do we go from there? So I've always felt like the actors aren't like upset. They seem like they really enjoy each other's company, but I almost feel like they're like talking to each other like, don't you kind of wish that Marvel Studios had bought the X-Men franchise a little earlier and maybe we could have gotten some of that money? That's the vibe I get whenever, like, I feel like I never hear Jennifer Lawrence talk about Dark Phoenix or like the X-Men movies are like, oh, I'm so excited for people to see this. I don't feel like any of the actors involved have ever gone out of their way to be like, I can't wait for you guys to see this movie. Maybe that's a fault of their PR people and the marketing people not making them post things on social media, but it's always felt a little like, oh yeah, that's right, I did that other movie that's gonna come
out. That's a good point. Right. I think maybe the only person that has done that in a positive way has probably been like Hugh Jackman, who isn't in them anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. is this like the first X-Men movie where he's not even referenced? It feels like he's been referenced in every single X-Men movie except this one. I think that might be true,
except
actually.
Maybe when Raven dies, it kind of looks like his claws. Yeah. But maybe that's right. Just
well,
my dark
we can't,
sense.
Couldn't even get out of this one without a Wolverine reference.
One of the things I felt like, though, you know, I was, again, for the most part, I felt like all of the other performances were pretty good in the film, and especially the ones that I needed to be there. You know, I think James McAvoy is giving it all he has. I don't feel like Michael Fassbender is phoning it in. I feel like Nicholas Holt, you know, is definitely really invested. And I too felt like Sophie Turner did a very good job with what she did have to work with to make me care enough that, you know, when she's having that moment, you know, where it's raining and she's like the blood is all and she's just kind of having that kind of almost psychotic moment of like she can't get the blood off and like she doesn't know what to do. And like, I think she's great in a lot of those places. You know, there's some stuff here where I think she's definitely pulling on her Sansa work, you know, with Game of Thrones. You can see that. And then, you know, there were some moments too where like even where she's having fun with Scott and she showed a lot of range. I've just, you know, again, it's not her. And I don't really think, for the most part, it's anyone in this movie. I think the only one who just totally gets shortchanged in the film is Evan Peters. You know,
totally.
Quicksilver. Yeah. He's barely in the movie.
He basically got Captain Marveled in this movie, where they were like, how do we get him out of the movie as quickly as possible so he can't solve everyone's problems?
I kind of like how you just turned Captain Marvel into a verb, Captain Marvel.
Where it's basically, well, Captain Marvel, when it's like, oh, sorry, I have to go back to my home planet, which is, I guess, a Poochie thing. So technically, Poochie should be the verb. But That's what it felt like when they like Quicksilver just gets knocked out immediately and then he's gone for the rest of the movie. It's like, is he dead? Is he okay? We never hear from him again. And then all of a sudden at the end, he's like, hey, what's up, everybody? And it's like, wait a second. Where were you this entire time? Were you sick that whole time?
He realized slow motion doesn't solve all your problems.
That's right. That's the hard lesson learned in this movie.
Yeah, I definitely wanted more of him.
Well, maybe they just felt like, we can't top the other scenes that he's done, you know?
Yeah.
He had great music.
So that's something that I, you know, I actually enjoyed the train action sequence. I don't know about you guys, but I thought what made it good was that we finally got to watch the team work together as a team. To me, you know, very few of the X-Men movies have really had the whole team working together and in concert with each other, using their powers in tandem to make something happen. And so I found that really enjoyable. I didn't feel like, again, it's, I think the other part about it was it wasn't one of those things where I felt like we just have to make this action sequence as big as possible. It's like they found a way to make it what it needed to be for the story, but not make it so overblown that it just feel like, oh, we're just trying to be ridiculously huge. It just was what it was. And to me, it worked. And I know a lot of people just kind of like, I don't know, I feel like they've been poo-pooing it, but I didn't find it rote or boring or anything like that. I was enjoying all of the action, especially watching them all kind of, especially the kid versions, you know, be able to use their powers really well. I mean, the moment when Kurt just goes psycho was kind of great, you know, like some of those moments there too with the acting and everything, and action allowed them to be able to do those things. So I enjoyed the action of the film. I felt like it fit what it needed to fit without being like so overblown or so ridiculous that like now I'm just tuning out.
I was never bored with it. Like, that's the thing. I think a lot of times what determines how much I dislike a movie is how bored I am watching it. And I was never bored watching Dark Phoenix, so I can give it that. There was some stuff with the Jessica Chastain stuff that I was like, I don't care. But it wasn't so frequently on screen that it just killed me. I thought the train sequence was great. Like you said, it was a really cool way to see them all team up. It was small scale, so it wasn't like the end of the world is nigh and we have to stop. It just felt like very, like, the stakes were pretty grounded. They had to protect Jean. Everyone's working together. I thought it was a little goofy the way they kind of had Magneto and Beast very quickly change their tune. Like, they've been like, we're going to kill her. And then Professor Xavier is like, you don't understand. It's not her fault. And Magneto's like, you're right. I don't want to kill her anymore. And it was like, all right, well, okay. That felt a little goofy. But overall, I enjoyed it. I liked, I thought the kill where Kurt transports the guy out in front of the train was really, that felt like a,
if that this movie had been, best this
movie. Yeah, if this movie had been better, that would have been a really good cheer moment for the audience. My audience was actually surprisingly into it. They applauded at the end, which I was like, oh, well, all right, I guess, you know, give this movie some consolation. Mm-hmm. But I agree. I thought it was, for the most part, it did really well with what it had to work with.
I did also think that it the train scene was fine. I was right along for the ride the whole time in that scene. I felt like it was nice to making it seem difficult to get rid of the aliens. You know, they had sort of that Terminator vibe of no matter how many times you shoot them, they grow back and you're going, how can we kill these guys? But Nightcrawler, I think, is probably my favorite of all the X-Men. And I think it was especially awesome in this, and getting his vindictive moment of throwing that guy in front of the train. I'm so glad you brought that up, because I was
It was great. The movie is not. I don't get it. Rotten Tomatoes isn't everything. Rotten Tomatoes is a good bad ratio. Like, you see it all the time, even with a movie like Doctor Strange. Doctor Strange has a 90% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think like The Exorcist has an 86%. So it's like, we're not talking, no one in their right mind would say Doctor Strange is a better movie than The Exorcist. But what happens is if a movie gets a lukewarm review, like where someone was like, it's fine, that gives it a pass. So Rotten Tomatoes, you have to take with a grain of salt. That being said, 22% seems so harsh for people to so beat up on this movie. I don't know. Like, and it's not just the fact that it's like people saying this movie wasn't great. It's like people really tearing it apart. I get that it's not great. I get that it's kind of, especially after Avengers, it feels like, oh, we have to do one of these again. Fine. But like, it's not terrible. And it's like they did the best with what they had. This movie was never going to be good or great with all the production woes it was experiencing. The fact that it feels coherent in some respect feels like a minor miracle. So I don't know. It feels, I'm not going to jump on a bandwagon and be like, this movie is amazing. But like, it does feel very like, why is everyone beating up this movie? Like, didn't they go through enough? The movie's not going to make any money. It's like they limped across the finish line. Are we really just going to rip this thing to shreds?
You know,
the answer is yes, we are.
I wanted to talk to you guys about, because, you know, I feel like I've been noticing it more and more and more with movies where the pre-movie story gets written for a film, and the story either poisons the well for that movie or it makes it bulletproof, you know? And I feel like this is a movie, and this movie is suffering, I think, from this many of the same things that happened with Solo, honestly. It's like, just because a movie has production woes doesn't mean it's going to be a bad movie. If you read everything that went wrong during the filming of Star Wars, it would have been one of these movies. Like, everybody been like, oh no, that's a train wreck. You're not going to want to go see that. It's awful. You know what happened on set in Tunisia? They lost like the entire set. Like, we didn't know any of that crap. And nobody cared. They just went and saw the finished picture and they judged the movie by the finished product. And like you said, Sean, this movie is like, it's like those commercials where they're like, it's fine. You know, yeah. Like, so it's not, you're not one of the best. No, but I'm good. Are you good? Yeah, I'm good. You know, but it's not great. And like, there's a big difference between a movie being an absolute train wreck, which is Aladdin, mm-hmm. and you know, this movie where it's like, it's fine. There's nothing wrong with it in the sense of like, I'm not bored in it. I'm not checking my phone every 5 seconds, wondering what time it is. When is this going to be over? All I actually want from the movie is that I like it enough so I actually just want it to be better. You know, I come out of it thinking, man, if you had done this, this, and this, this would have been a better film. And I'm actually just kind of tired of pre-narratives ruining films before they actually even get a chance with the audience. I think that's kind of wrong. And it's disappointing because you can't judge a movie till it's actually finished, you know, and then judge the movie for what it actually is. And is this movie 22%? Absolutely not. And Sean, you talking about like Doctor Strange being at 90%, I'm like, that's a like 70% movie at best. You know,
well, everyone has their own Rotten Tomatoes rating scale.
You know, like, but this movie does not deserve to be at 22%. Like, it, this is probably a 60%
movie.
30%.
Like
3.
Realistically, you know? Yeah. Realistically, if this movie hadn't been, I think if this movie, I think it was originally supposed to be released late last year and then they moved it. I just read a Hollywood Reporter article and they were saying that it was going to be released end of last year, but then it got moved to February, and then James Cameron was worried Alita wasn't going to do well if it was competing with X-Men. So they moved it again, and then Alita didn't do well anyway.
Alita sucked.
And Dark Phoenix didn't do well either. So nobody's happy. And I think we're just living in an age, blockbuster filmmaking has trained us. Star Wars is the best example. You see it every time a new Star Wars movie comes out. If it's not like the best movie ever, it's the worst movie ever. And it's like, it can't be just like, oh, that was good. A Star Wars movie has to be either terrible or it has to be amazing. And it can't just be like, fine. And X-Men is the victim of that. It's coming out right after Avengers Endgame, this epic finale that's not really a finale, but still, it like kind of raised the bar for superhero cinema. And then Dark Phoenix kind of comes out and it's like, hey, we're here too. And it's anything in comparison to Endgame is kind of going to feel feeble. But Dark Phoenix just had so much working against it that immediately people were like, you suck. It can't just be like, we can't just be happy with like a movie that was like, oh, that was a decent time at the movies. It has to be, especially with blockbusters and superheroes and franchises, it has to be amazing or else everyone's like, eh. I don't know if that's because the market's oversaturated or what, but that's what it feels like.
I do definitely feel like it's unfair for people to come out and have all these harsh judgments when no one had even seen it yet. I mean, because absolutely.
Also, nobody's seen it. No one's seen it now, judging from the box office.
But like, if you haven't seen it and all you know is that there were these shooting problems, then I don't think that you can judge anything yet. And so I did actually stay away from any of that until I saw the movie. I think maybe the day before, my husband had mentioned something to me about, did you hear about the shooting issues? And I said, no, I just was, you know, saw the preview and was like, oh, okay, maybe that'll be good. I like Sophie Turner. So I did go into it, thankfully, kind of unknowing with that stuff, which I'm glad for. But I do feel like we all wanted more from this than we got.
Yeah.
And that's what's disappointing for me.
Yeah. I will say the buzz surrounding the movie and all the controversy helped temper my expectations. Like, I think if I had gone into this like Dark Phoenix, oh, it's going to be great and everything X-Men 3 was, I don't know. It kind of helped me settle my expectations. I think the articles and the stuff about the production was, I went into it knowing, well, this movie sounds like a mess. They've delayed it so many times. There's no way it's going to be good. It's not going to be great. It's probably not going to be good. I would like for it to be decent and not terrible. And I got those things. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that helps. But I kind of get the, it's very easy to start beating up on a movie once everybody around you is like, that's terrible. True. And you're like, oh, I guess it is. You're right.
Yeah. And I think that's always the thing. Like, you know, I think it kind of said many a times in the show, it's like, don't just go make up your own mind, you know? And honestly, so many times the less you know about how the sausage is made when it comes to movies, the better you are for it. You know, it's like, go read all that stuff after you see the movie. But like, you know, you knowing that so-and-so was cast and then somebody else was cast, and like, so much of this stuff actually hurts our enjoyment of film rather than actually helps. And I don't know why we have to feel like we have to know all of it, you know, because again, like, I just go back to thinking about, imagine Twitter on the original Star Wars shoot and all the press releases and, like, you know, the Hollywood Reporter articles about how awful the, you know, the set is, and like George Lucas isn't really talking to his cast, and like, I mean, just think, you could just picture all of the headlines and how that movie would have been completely poisoned to the audience before they even saw it. And it's like, it doesn't matter. It's all about the movie itself. And like, so I guess for you guys coming down to it, the final countdown here, what is your rating for Dark Phoenix?
So I think for me, thinking about all of the things, I'm glad that we discussed as a group to get to realize the things that I did enjoy about this movie, maybe more than I remembered. In particular, like I said, with Raven, I loved that portrayal of her death and what it meant for the other people in her life. And I think that having as many of the original actors back as you could gave it a lot of strength that it needed. But I wish that we had gotten some more of people like Magneto and like Quicksilver, like we said. And it did have a great score. Of course, having Hans Zimmer come and do that, I felt like gave it a lot more gravitas that it needed as well.
Wait, Hans Zimmer did the score?
Yeah,
for this?
Yeah. He came out of superhero retirement to do this score.
I totally forgot that, so I'm glad I threw that in there. But it, you know, it had a couple of things that were big drawbacks for me as well, because I didn't feel like the threat was really a threat. And if it's going to be called Dark Phoenix, I think that probably that should be the biggest part of the movie. And it felt like it was kind of off to the side, and that, you know, really more of it was about Xavier and him, you know, kind of turning toward the villain side. And I don't know, it didn't feel like it really should have been the end to an era of X-Men movies. It felt like there should have been a few more, or it should have been longer, like you said, Matt. So for me, really, it kind of comes down to a 4 out of 10. I'm going to say Magneto helmets, because that's on my mind right now.
Yeah. It bums me out. It's, you know, I went on my rant about Rotten Tomatoes, but if I were to contribute a review, and it sounds like Christie's too, I'd probably do like 4 or 5. I'm gonna say 5 just to be nice to this poor movie. But that's technically a rotten review, so I'm contributing to that 22%. Sorry, but I will say the movie is not terrible for me. X-Men 3 is like one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And a lot of that is painted by
Wolverine Origins.
What? Oh, X-Men
Wolverine
Origins too.
Wolverine Origins.
X-Men, but the thing is, X-Men Origins, I never expected to be good. And X-Men 3, I was hoping would be great, especially after X-Men 2. I knew it had a different director, but I was hoping for the best. And I got something so the opposite of the first two X-Men movies. So Dark Phoenix feels tonally more like X-Men 1 and 2. Like, it doesn't have any stupid jokes or anything that made X-Men 3 such a miserable experience. The character beats feel more genuine, and like I said, the character deaths felt a little more earned. It's not a bad movie. It's not particularly good, but it's like, it's fine. It really falls into the same category as Apocalypse, where I don't know if I'll ever watch it again, but I didn't hate myself for watching it. So I'll just be nice and say 5. Realistically, I'd probably give it a 4, but I'm gonna be nice.
There you go.
Yeah, see, you know, for me, this is, I'd say this is, you know, 6 out of 10. It's just right above average, but it's just kind of right in that area that we're all in, right? And it's just fresh. Like, again, it's like to me, if I were given a Rotten Tomatoes score, it's 60%. You know, it's just fresh.
So our scores are the original Star Wars trilogy, 4, 5, and 6. Nice.
Yeah, exactly.
What does that mean?
And I feel like this is definitely one of the times where the reviewing world, like, and I said this to John Mills, and I'll say it here. Like, I feel like there's a thing where you open the door in the reviewing world to be able to just, like, destroy a movie, and you open that a crack, and that's exactly what happens. Like, everybody just dogpiles on the movie and destroys it. Because this, I mean, the same thing happened to Batman v Superman, and that movie is not a 20-whatever% movie either.
At least one of us in this room wearing a Superman shirt would seem to differ.
I just feel like that's the case with so many of these type of movies where they just get the most rotten scores, you know. And again, like we all said, the movie's fine. It's not the best movie you're going to see. It's not going to be the worst movie you're going to see. It's going to be in the middle, you know. I wouldn't say it's the Goldilocks of films where it's just right, but you know, it you could do worse at the theater right now.
You could.
So don't go see Aladdin. Go see, you know, Dark Phoenix. Do yourself a favor. Stay away from Aladdin. See Dark Phoenix.
You could have watched.
There's one thing you take away. Really, we could just have made this entire review Matt explaining why no one should see Aladdin.
I could.
We went and saw it the same day, so I'm right along with Matt.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah, go watch The Room. Anyway. That'll be the worst movie you've ever seen.
Oh man.
Anyway.
But you know, I think this is the thing that I love about doing this show, is being able to come in and kind of really talk through things, and like we didn't do the thing where we just could have ripped this movie a new one like everybody else. I think we really intellectually talked through the criticisms we had of this film and the reasons we thought that they were that way and the ways that we would have made it better. Like, I think that's what makes for good movie criticism is being able to talk about the problems you saw, but actually what you would have done to change it and make it better. And so that's the fun of doing this show, and I'm really glad we got an opportunity to do that. And I'm thankful that our producers, our associate producers here through Patreon, Ken Tripp, Davis Grayson, Ryan Millett, and Daniel Noah give us the opportunity to do that. They support the network each and every week through Patreon, make sure that all the shows here on Trek FM as well as the 602 Club come to you each and every week. Now, they know what we hope you will know, and that's that we can't do this alone. Trek FM is a very big network, and there's always a lot going on. We have so many episodes coming out each and every week, and the only way that we can support this network is through listeners just like you. So please go over to patreon.com/trekfm and see how you can be part of our team. We have some great contribution levels that you can give at that give you even extra perks, but honestly, every little bit helps. Again, that's patreon.com/TrekFM. Now, Clark Kent, Sean, if anybody wants to catch up with you and find out how wrong you are about Batman v Superman, where can they find you?
You can find me over on the Nerd Party Network. There I host and produce a show called Missing Frames, which is where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. Things like The Godfather, Princess Bride, whatever, anything where someone would slap you if you told them you hadn't seen it. That's what we do, minus the slapping. Maybe we need more slapping. I don't know. You can tell us.
Like that but
you
Batman can find me comic there. Where, you know, he gets slapped, you know, like that's she perfect. Slaps Robin. Yeah.
I like to think I bring something special to the podcasting community, mainly slapping. But you can find me there. So you can find me all over the web on Twitter at YayShondorman. I'm just hanging out there. Yell at me. It'll be great.
And you're on Letterboxd too under YayShondorman.
I'm on Letterboxd. You can yell at me in so many places at YayShondorman. It's just Shondorman on Letterboxd, but you can read my reviews there. I should write one for Dark Phoenix. I feel like it'll just be me just being sad. Which maybe people want to see. Maybe people want that.
Well, Christy, obviously, it's always great that you're here with me to do these shows, and you have had a plethora of new things start, and so please let everybody know what those are.
Yeah, you can find me personally on Twitter and Instagram, of course, at BestBenBell, and now Sean and I are going to have to go follow each other. And I'm also, of course, other than the 602 Club, which I do usually here with Matt, I'm glad we got to be on this one and do Dark Phoenix together, because I know I didn't get to do the other previous X-Men discussions with you guys, so I'm glad to go back and hear some of those too. But in addition to 602 Club, every other week, I do a show with my friend Teresa called Sabers and Spells. And we talk about pretty much anything geek pop culture we went to for 30 to 45 minutes. We just recently did the Game of Thrones final season, and we're about to talk about Umbrella Academy. So if you haven't watched that yet, or if you're just starting, join us for that. And then otherwise, I do once a month a 5-minute segment called Fashion in 5 on the Star Wars Report about men's and women's Star Wars fashion. And finally, I do a show once a month called Planet Leia on the Fantatrax Network with a couple other girls talking about Star Wars perspectives from around the world.
You guys do so much more than I do.
You do a lot.
I'm like the Dark Phoenix. I'm like the Dark Phoenix of this this trio.
I mean, I didn't want to say anything, but let me list all the ways I'm better than Sean. Just kidding. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd on the name MattRushing02. I am here on the network when we can get out a show. Chris and I are doing The Orb as we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. You can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network, along with Sean, doing a show with our good friend, a mutual good friend, John Mills, as we talk all about Star Wars each and every week on Aggressive Negotiations. You can also find me doing Owlpost with Drea Kaufman, as we're talking about the Harry Potter series one chapter at a time. And then last but not least, I do Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, as we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for joining us.
And y'all come back now, you hear?